Over the past couple of years, we've actually sat down after church to have coffee together. And I think that the conversations have become much more meaningful because of that. We occasionally keep talking until someone tells us to leave because we've overstayed our welcome. So that's a good thing. That when we look at society in general, the art of conversation seems to have diminished. In a cafe or restaurant, it's not unusual to see perhaps four people sitting at a table, all looking at their phones, either checking their phones, texting, or actually talking on them. Modern phones are a great way of communicating, but not at the expense of face-to-face conversation. I'm sure we've all been involved in conversations, though, with people who are not the least bit interested in what we have to say. They hose us with their opinions without waiting for any response, or else they ignore us completely. I recently read the autobiographical Chronicles of a Cairo Bookseller by the Egyptian author Nadia Wassef. At one stage, she was persuaded to read The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, which probably many of you have read. Anyone who's read any of his books might assume that he's interested in people and their relationships. Wassef found herself seated next to Coelho at a dinner after he'd given a lecture at the Cairo University. She told him how much she'd enjoyed his lecture. He was completely uninterested, probably so accustomed to cultish reverence that her enthusiasm left no impression whatsoever. He turned to the lady on his left, and Wassef left too. I had a similar experience several years ago at a business dinner, but unfortunately I was not in a position to leave. This response does nothing for human communication. After such experience, we'd probably try to avoid being in that situation again. But we also may try to avoid people who are outspoken about what they believe, feeling that there is no way that our opinion is going to make any difference to their point of view. We could not possibly have anything in common, no point of connection. But sometimes it's worth taking the risk. Many years ago, there was a woman at this church who had fairly radical opinions on many issues and was quite outspoken about them. I felt that she was not on my wavelength, so I tended to avoid her. The time came when she had surgery, and I just felt strongly that I should visit her. And that was the day our close friendship began. She's now become one of my most valued friends, and I'm so glad I made the decision to visit her that day. Since then, I think perhaps I've become a bit more liberal and she's perhaps become a little less radical. But we've also been very open with each other, sharing so much more about each other, helping us to understand each other better. The best conversations are those where people actually exchange opinions and listen to what the other has to say, accepting that the other point of view actually might have some validity. Eventually, we might just agree to disagree, but we feel that the conversation has been worthwhile. For several years, I used to lead devotions on a regular basis at retirement villages. On one particular day, I mentioned something about Indigenous people in my message. At the end of the service, a woman came up to me and challenged me about my opinions. She and her husband had worked at the Baptist Mission in Central Australia and indicated that she thought I was mistaken in what I had said. After about 15 minutes of very spirited discussion, she said, "Thank you, that was so stimulating. I hope you say something controversial next time so we can have a similar conversation." Here was a woman who wanted a stimulating conversation but had no one with whom to share it. But some people just can't cope with conflicting opinions. With John and my brother, I visited our parents regularly every weekend in their later years. Often the conversation was going well until we started talking about one particular topic on which my mother had very definite views, and she was sure she was right. Unfortunately, the rest of us didn't share her opinion. And when we tried to put another perspective, she would become a bit defensive, and it wouldn't be long before she was saying, "Well, I think we've talked enough about that. Perhaps we could talk about something else." And then we would move to a less controversial topic. And that made me wonder a bit how we conduct conversations with non-believers who might challenge us with our beliefs. Are we prepared to change our minds if they put forward a good alternative suggestion, or do we have to be right? We know that religious jargon can put people off. It may make us appear to think we're better than they, or knowing more than they know. It's not always so. We can get new insights into the Christian life from a variety of sources, from people, from books, from newspaper articles, and most definitely from life experiences. I remember when I was in early secondary school, one day I said to one of the girls in my class, "I don't like myself." There was no suggestion that she wanted to hear why. She just said to me, "Remember that your body is the temple of the living God." Well, that was a conversation stopper if ever there was one. I still shudder at the memory of that. If she'd actually talked to me, it might have helped, but maybe not, but at least I would have known she cared, and I don't think she really did. Jeff Brown, in his small book of meditations, Articulations, writes, "Perhaps we can ask each other more questions, real questions, the kind that connect us. Perhaps we can encounter each other from a place of honest inquiry and genuine curiosity, not assumption, not psychological characterisation, not the egoic need to judge, real inquiry. Here I am, here you are, curious about each other, wondering how we got here, allowing time to hear each other's stories, and to really listen, to get to know, to wonder. Inquiry changes everything." Our attitude to other people can surely affect the way they perceive the Christian message. Many years ago, one of my relatives, unmarried at the time, was living with his girlfriend. At family gatherings, his pious grandmother would not even acknowledge the girl's presence, let alone talk to her. Was the grandmother living the gospel? If she'd joined in conversation with the girl and made her feel welcome, even if she disagreed with her lifestyle, who knows what influence she may have had? This reminded me of my first year in teaching. I was sent to a small country school, which fortunately for me had two fine Christian women teachers there, one of whom belonged to the Brethren faith community. Her grandmother, who was exclusive Brethren, lived with the family, but she would never have meals with the family because she always said she wasn't well enough. She had regular visits from the elders of the church, always behind closed doors. To understand what was happening, my colleague said she listened in at the conversations these men were having with her grandmother. She heard them tell her grandmother she was not to have meals with the family because they were not exclusive Brethren, and they were not of her faith community. So this elderly woman was denied the intimacy of having her family and friends around her. She was completely isolated. I can't see Jesus condoning that conversation, that behaviour. We know he encouraged his followers to reach out to others, going into the world to preach the gospel, not isolating themselves from anyone who didn't follow their faith. Let us think about how people communicated in Jesus' day. We know they wrote letters to each other, but we also know they walked everywhere. What better way to have a conversation than when we're walking? What did Jesus and his friends talk about as they walked? Did they share feeling things with each other about what they were feeling, what they needed to do, what was happening in the world around them? Did they have arguments when they disagreed or agreed to disagree? Or did they just move on and walk with someone else? We read of Jesus' conversations with many people on a personal basis. He listened to their questions and would answer them with parables, stories which were relevant to their everyday lives, miracles and illustrations, often with painstaking efforts to discuss them in great detail. Because he must have been a charismatic speaker, they were engaged immediately when he started speaking. He gave them something to think about. He was also very aware of what was going on with the people around him. In that dense crowd, when that desperate woman touched the hem of his robe, he said, "Who touched me?" His disciples looked at him in disbelief. "What do you mean, who touched you? Everyone's touching you. Everyone's crowding around. What do you mean?" Jesus discerned that this woman needed both physical healing and to be seen and respected. He sought her out, focused on her, and gave her his full attention. On another occasion, he spoke to the woman at the well, a very unexpected meeting with someone from another culture and a woman on her own. He sensed that she wanted freedom from the stigmas that had been placed on her. Other significant conversations with Jesus recorded in the scriptures were with people such as the man who had been ripping off the taxpayers, Zacchaeus, who invited Jesus to share a meal with him, attracting scorn from the onlookers, the disabled man at the pool of Bethesda, varied conversations with his disciples, and so on. What a variety of people, but certainly not all believers. He gave each of them his full attention and addressed their needs, following them up. When he met the rich young ruler, he might have assumed that what the man wanted most was to be freed from the desperate dependence on his wealth. In each of these conversations, these individuals' needs were where Jesus started, leading on to the good news he offered. In our reading, we heard again the story of Jesus visiting the home of Mary and Martha. He'd walked a long way with his disciples and needed food, rest, and quiet company. Mary sat down at the feet of Jesus, drinking in all he had to say. Martha was slaving away in the kitchen, getting more and more annoyed that Mary was not helping her. Why should she sit there just enjoying herself, chatting while Martha did all the work? It didn't seem fair. And what did Jesus mean when he told Martha that Mary was doing the right thing? Perhaps he was suggesting that Martha was going to too much trouble for the meal. All he needed was simple nourishment, and maybe Martha thought that she had to go to a lot of trouble for someone as important as Jesus. We can also visualise what might have happened if Mary had gone to help Martha in the kitchen. Jesus would have been left all alone. That wouldn't have been appropriate. He wanted and needed company at that particular time. There's a lot to be said for the open-plan kitchen diner that many people want these days, where people can continue chatting while they are preparing the meal. Both women were doing something of value. We don't all have the same skills and motivation. We all have a part to play, but we need to see that what we think is needed isn't what also always is needed. We need to listen carefully just to what the other person is trying to convey to us. Perhaps Jesus was trying to tell Martha that she needed to change her attitude and understand the different roles that each woman had. But how do we react when someone asks us a curly question or disagrees with something we strongly believe in? Are we able to take a deep breath and address the issue with an open mind? Have we developed a strategy to come to the conversation with calmness and the possibility that we might need to change our own attitudes on a particular subject? I know I don't have all the answers. Sometimes a curly question can clarify our thinking on a particular issue. And it's certainly not a sin to say, "I don't know." And we don't always know why people are non-believers. Of course, there are some that have never heard the Christian message. Others may have experienced some trauma in the past and put the blame on God. Or they may say, "Where was God when I really needed him?" Some of them are yearning to believe in something or someone, but things have just not come together for them. Listening to their stories may enable us to throw some light on their dilemma. Most people are searching for truth or for some meaning to this thing we call life. I think many of us feel that any relationship is based on the acceptance of the other person, wherever they are from or whatever they believe. It is based on sharing and coming to some type of consensus, maybe just agreeing to disagree on certain topics. But it's not cutting ourselves off from those who might have different opinions or beliefs. Reaching out can lead to those stimulating conversations I had with that woman at Headley Sutton. A few years ago, I shared with you the story of Ailsa Piper, who walked the Camino Trail in Spain to carry the sins of those who'd contacted her before she set out. It seemed strange for someone who'd been raised a nominal Catholic and had become agnostic to embark on this journey, but her book was a very moving account of her journey. On the completion of her pilgrimage and the subsequent publication of her book, Sinning Across Spain, which was indeed banned from some bookshops because it didn't look appropriate, she received an email from Father Tony Doherty, a Sydney-based Catholic priest, one of the good ones. He'd been given a copy of her book and couldn't put it down. He contacted her and started a rich and rewarding exchange of emails. Ailsa was based in Melbourne, so meeting face-to-face couldn't happen at that stage. The result was the development of a very warm and productive friendship built on hope and possibility, with each party showing care and respect for the opinions of the other. They became very open with each other, their friendship developing to the stage of being able to ask each other curly questions, even though these occasionally led to misunderstandings. This correspondence was later published under the title The Attachment, Letters from a Most Unlikely Friendship. In one email, Ailsa wrote, "I believe relationships are our greatest teachers, and the more they evolve via attending or arguing, sharing or diverging, the more we expand as human beings. And that's our main aim in life, I reckon, to help one another to grow." As well as the emails, there were a few inclusions in the book about how these two people felt about their relationship. Ailsa said she connected with Tony because he listened without judgment and worked at the friendship as it developed. Knowing who you see is who they are, authentic. She said that a close relationship involves sharing stories and knowledge and establishing trust. They shared many stories about their family heritage, some of which they had learned only recently. They shared their day-to-day activities and how they were feeling at the end of the day, showing a really real interest in each other's well-being and finding out how they thought about many issues which were raised on a regular basis. Stories of the abuse rife in the Catholic Church were making headlines at the time of their correspondence. Tony told Ailsa how he felt sick to his stomach at the horrible stories which were making the news. He was making himself available to anyone who wished to talk about the issue. Ailsa asked him why he became a priest and challenged him with false assumptions about the priesthood. At times he was hurt by her questions, but that didn't stop him continuing the dialogue. After he spent some time explaining his call to the priesthood, he responded to Ailsa, "In return for me struggling to describe to you why I have chosen such an unfashionable life's work, can you tell me why you're so passionate about the vocation of a writer? Might find, I suspect, some interesting overlap." And later, "For as long as I can remember, I've been caught up in the urgency to find better words to touch people's hunger for spirituality. There's a lot of traditional religious language which is tired, a currency which has lost its value. I love that fire in the belly that the best writers have, to search for that killer sentence. I don't think it's crazy to say that we share the same drive to explore the power of language." After attending a meeting to allow people to express their feelings about the abuse within the church, Tony told Ailsa the next day that good connections were made, and an atmosphere was created which led to intelligent and worthwhile discussion, instigating the possibility of healing by allowing these people to share their stories and meet some amazing strangers along the way. Tony and Ailsa made time for each other, expanding each other's views on many topics, sharing ideas and possibilities, opening both hearts and minds to each other, extending themselves. It seems that there need to be certain ground rules with any worthwhile relationship. For instance, don't make assumptions about the other person. They're often wrong. Tony told Ailsa that many people saw him simply as a priest and then quickly quickly drew all kinds of false assumptions about what he believed, what his values were, and opinions about all manner of things. He said their suppositions were consistently off the mark. The most important thing is to listen attentively, give the person our full attention, then finding the points of connection, common ground, be it with books, films, sport, shares experiences, understanding their perspective on things with which we may disagree, being prepared to welcome questions and ideas, being prepared to acknowledge our ignorance on certain issues, acknowledging the value of their presence in our lives, being prepared to change our perspective on long-believed issues. Of course, we're not going to connect on that level with everyone, but we need to be our authentic selves with everyone we meet, be it neighbour, relative, shop assistant, tradesman. All deserve to be treated with dignity. Sharing our love for God is probably more a matter of living the Christian life than preaching. Someone described it more to do with building relationships than building a case for Christianity. He wrote, "In fact, most evangelists look more like the neighbour who offers to shovel a snowy driveway than the street preacher who peddles salvation like a heavenly retirement plan." See the person's needs and start from there. Good news means different things to different people. It all depends on what is happening in their lives. We look again at how Jesus spread his message, reaching out a hand of friendship to the leper whom society had rejected, sharing a meal with sinners, stopping to have a conversation at the well with a person from another culture, as well as preaching to the crowds, telling stories about life as it was in those days. In living life like that, we can grow together with the other person, enriching each other with new experiences and letting go of former rigidly held beliefs. We might even learn something new about ourselves and about God. Amen.